Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome into the Early Line, hour number 2 right here on Sports Grid. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside with you on a Thursday morning. And we turn our attention to the college football world. Thursday night football is not just exclusive to the NFL. We've got some ACC action. Wow, the ACC is terrible, but it is an interesting game here. We have the Miami Hurricanes playing their first conference game of the season. We've got the Virginia Cavaliers looking for their first conference win of the year. And the spread is coming down, down, down. The U now only 4.5-point favorites, a total, Donnie, of 61.5.
Yeah, I'm guessing ESPN put this football game on a Thursday, figuring Miami is probably going to be, I don't want to say undefeated, but maybe a loss from Alabama and, you know, making their way down, first ACC game. I do think we get an entertaining game overall, but entertainment is going to be in the eye of the beholder tonight, because what are we getting out of Miami? Now, yes, they're back. I mean, when you look, college universities that have the moniker, like the handle names, like CCon, like, hey, that's a big win over CCon last week. Back in check, 69-0. Defense looked phenomenal. Offense looked phenomenal. The depth of the Miami Hurricanes. But now you get back to the ACC. And I don't know why you're laughing at that, because that was as impressive as a performance you're going to find here in 2021. But as I look at the Miami Hurricanes, is De'Aaron King going to be under center? How healthy will he be under center? We watched the game last week with Virginia versus Wake Forest, and after two drives, I think Virginia might be the best team in the country, Kev. You can't stop that offense. And they went in the tank the rest of the way against Wake Forest.
So my question
to you is, favorite for Miami, okay, FanDuel opened up at 2.5, now it's at 4.5. They're at home. Mm-hmm. But the over-under, 61.5, 62. Outside of last week against CCon, where they pummeled them, the Miami offense hasn't looked all that great. And with a banged-up quarterback now?
So this is the thing about Miami, right? Is the other day, Donnie's out there parading around, the U is back. And as one of my favorite people replied, back where? I mean that's exactly what it's all like. I don't know. What do you mean back with in the back of the standings? The thing about Miami that makes this all the more difficult, though, is Tyler Van Dyke comes in, 10 of 11, 270 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. Jake Garcia, 11 of 14, 147. 2 touchdowns, no picks. Now, again, it was CCon. I mean, De'Aaron King wasn't playing well. Like, it's not like De'Aaron King was doing all he could, but the defense was letting him down. He wasn't playing well at all. Like, people are asking, is there a quarterback controversy going into this game? Is Miami going to play 3 quarterbacks in this football game, Donnie? Like, is that why this spread is dropping down despite being at home to a Virginia team that is winless and coverless in ACC action?
It's an odd game because when you're looking at Miami as a totality, right? Thursday night football game at home versus Virginia, it should be an automatic win. You open up the schedule every year you play Virginia, it's supposed to be a win. But again, this isn't the Miami teams under Larry Coker, Harold Schnellenberger, you know, Dennis Erickson, Butch Davis. This is a much lower quality team under Manny Diaz. But you were thinking coming into the season, it was a shame because De'Aaron King transfers to the University of Miami last year. Everybody's happy, plays well, team gets off to a pretty good start, but he hurts his leg in the last game of the season. It's like he's probably not going to be back. Rehabs quite well, looks all less, or you know, no worse for the wear coming into the season off of that knee injury, but something just isn't clicking, and now it's a shoulder injury. So what you love about De'Aaron King is they're going to run it. You know, Lashley's offense is built on 5 wide receivers. Let's run fast, but we have a mobile quarterback with also a good arm, so you can stress the defense out in that fashion. How are they going to stress the defense out in that same fashion, Kevin, if he's maybe not as willing to run or take those shots?
Radio audience in full effect. Appreciate all those listening to the Early Line on Sports Grid Radio. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside with you again here on this Thursday morning. And to your question about, like, the De'Aaron King, like, it almost feels like this game, it would just be easier to bet if they just, no, hey, we're not playing De'Aaron tonight. And just play, all right, cool, we don't have to worry about it. You know what I mean? The other thing I'll tell you is there will be player props for this game tonight. Not posted just yet, but we've seen, you know, spotlight games, whether they be on, you know, your Thursdays or your Fridays or the bigger games on Saturdays. They get player props, and they're as fun to bet into as the NFL. And Derek King's the kind of guy that, you know, it's, oh, man, I want to bet his rushing total over, whatever it might be. But as you said, not 100% and maybe looking over his shoulder, that makes it less than ideal. The other interesting thing, though, is this Virginia team that pulled an all-time bait and switch on myself and Donnie Wrightside doing an edition of In-Play Sports Tonight when they were going up against Wake. We're watching this game here. Virginia looks like, as Donnie said, they might score 70 points. I mean, the just up and down, up and down. And then all they just couldn't, all of a sudden they just could not move the football. Everything was three and out, a complete and utter nightmare there. And you might say, like, wait, what do you mean that that's how they looked early? They didn't even score in the first quarter. Like, turning it over on downs. Like, it was like, okay, that'll stop eventually. And it never stopped. But the defense remained bad. And Wake Forest and the 4-0 Demon Deacons just kept moving the football on Virginia. Like, I'd like to think, Don, that the Cavaliers are a perfect over kind of team. But I have no idea what happened to their offense at home last week against Wake.
Hey, I don't know either. And they look pretty solid to start that game. Billy Kemp, a good wide receiver that Virginia has, a little bit banged up in that one. So we'll see if he goes tonight. It's hard to take unders in Miami games because the defense isn't what it used to be. And also that Rhett Lashley offense does like to go fast. And Virginia does have a decent quarterback and a decent offense. It's hard to pull the trigger, though, Kevin. If I have one quarterback that's banged up on one side, you need everything full go to get into the 60s. So we'll see who actually plays in this one and maybe a live game situation.
And, of course, In-Play Sports Tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Myself and Donnie break that all down on SiriusXM Channel 204. But a lot more to get to here on the show. Major League Baseball is up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The hunt for playoff baseball continues, and right here on the early line, want to look at some of the results that we got from last night. But where I just want to start is the top of the American League, because the Rays clinched the number one seed and home field advantage throughout the AL postseason run. If they could perhaps get an upset of one of those big dogs from the NL West, they very well could host the World Series to boot. The Rays did it as well, Donnie, in what I thought was perfect fashion by beating Houston in Houston. And the Rays are still not the favorite to win the AL at plus 290 right now. The Astros are 2-1. It's been a while since we've talked about this, Donnie, because I know for a good portion of the early season, you felt like the Astros were the team to beat in the American League. Do you still feel that way, or does Tampa deserve to be the favorite out here in the AL?
It's a great question you bring up, because this isn't a, let's just say, an eight-game season where it's like, hey, Rays are 6-2, and you know the other team's a game bad. Don't worry, the cream will rise to the top, and the Astros will be a better team. It's a 162-game season. They were the best team in the American League. So we always like to overlook the Rays, including myself, and say, oh, sooner or later, another team is going to catch them, because they don't really have a great frontline starter. They have a lot of really good bullpen relievers, but not that superstar that you look at that's going to come in and close the door like a household name. You look at their lineup, it's a very good lineup, but there's not a lot of superstars in that lineup either. And they play down in Tampa in front of about 1,500 fans a game in one of the worst stadiums we've ever seen in Major League Baseball history. So it is time to start giving them some respect, but I can't back off of, you know, heading into the playoffs of what I see that might be a weakness for Tampa Bay, where they just don't have the big stars. I do see a team that's won a World Series before in the Houston Astros, so has a lot of those players from those World Series winning teams on that team, and it seems like they bounce back quite nicely from those cheating scandals. Say, hey, you know, you can call us cheaters here, but we still are 92-66 on the season. The one thing I love about the Rays is, you're right, the clinching fashion that they did it. They didn't clinch it in anonymity playing the Baltimore Orioles, you know, in Baltimore in front of no fans. And, hey, they're supposed to beat them. They went out on the road against a good Houston Astros club and beat them soundly 7-0 and still did not lead any of the, you know, pregame thoughts this morning. Like, hey, we have to talk about the Rays. No, we want to talk about teams that are fighting for their life to get into the wild card as opposed to talking about the best team, Kevin, in the American League with the Rays.
I think for me at this point, Donnie, it is a little bit disrespectful that the Rays aren't the top spot there. And this, it's not Houston slander at all, but yes, the Astros have crossed that finish line. The Rays won the American League last year. True. Like, the pedigree is there with this baseball team. And you also, I guess, in a way, like, it doesn't feel like the home field advantage aspect here is being valued enough. Like, if they meet Houston, they host that series. And the other aspect of this that is always fascinating to me is we already know the Astros are going to host the Chicago White Sox in the postseason run. I guess technically the White Sox could catch the Astros there, and that would even flip things around a little bit more. But when you think about the potential round one matchups, again, the White Sox will play the Astros. For the Rays, Donnie, whether it be any of these other AL East contenders or a Mariners team that we'll talk about in a moment there, is there a world where you feel like the Rays perhaps are drawing a more difficult matchup in the same way like the Giants might get gift-wrapped the Dodgers for their 107-win season in a round one matchup here? If you're the Rays, do you feel like a White Sox team maybe would be an easier draw than the trio of AL East contenders they're seemingly destined to face?
I don't, you know, what's interesting? It's a great point you bring up. Is it something that you take a look at the Rays, who have done very well in the AL East, where you say, we know the matchups. They're a very analytical forward, you know, institution down there in Tampa Bay. Maybe they have all the numbers they need from just playing them and know exactly what to anticipate if you play a team in the AL East, which they've done so many times. Maybe that unknown team, because you're also talking about a Chicago White Sox team that when they are healthy and they are full go 1-9, that is an intimidating lineup they can put out on the field. Big time strikeout performances in the front end. Back end of the bullpen, very good. If I'm looking from a Rays perspective right now, Kevin, I probably want the AL East before I get the Chicago White Sox. I have the identity factor. I know those teams in the AL East. Not really sure. I mean, look, they understand what the Chicago White Sox are about, and they have numbers on them. But just the familiarity of the team playing them and also saying, hey, we've been there, done that in these ballparks. We're comfortable in these ballparks when we go on the road. I think the Chicago White Sox are one of those teams that are laying low because they were never a factor with us saying they're not going to make the playoffs. It seemed like they were always in the playoffs for the last 60 days, and maybe that team now rested, ready, and healthy heading in. They're going to be a tough out here. For the Rays, for me, I'd rather have an AL East team.
The thing I will say about the Rays, though, is I do not want to hear anybody say, oh, but Tampa Bay dominated the AL East 49-24 against that division. That is true. 18 of those victories came against the Baltimore Orioles. They are 31-23. Still impressive. Still impressive against the Yankees, Red Sox, and Toronto. But a massive difference when you talk about a team that legitimately, and again, this isn't a slight, won this division because of their dominance over the Baltimore Orioles. But who is going to be playing the Tampa Bay Rays, Donnie? And I don't even want to talk about the usual suspects here. 30-1 on the Seattle Mariners to win the AL. Booked in a fashion that suggests they are back closer to Oakland, who Seattle knocked out last night and beat again last night here. Like, Donnie, the Mariners, we talk about teams closing it out with some easy, you know, situations where the Blue Jays will see the O's. The Mariners are going to host the Angels. Those are winnable baseball games here. Is Seattle not getting enough credit in terms of a legitimate shout to be in that AL wildcard game?
I'm amazed at where they're at in this season entirely, because if you're asking me throughout the season, and sometimes you look at the San Francisco Giants, you just have to admit they're a really good baseball team. They're getting good pitching, you know, good bullpen help. And obviously that 1-8 is hitting each and every night. A lot of lefties, a lot of righties. Matchups work out perfectly for San Francisco. But I don't have that same vibe with the Mariners. They're a very good ball club. Just look at their overall record, which is astounding when you think about it. This is one of the teams that we thought would be one of the worst in baseball and just treading water here to clear salaries and stack draft picks and see what they can do. They're a very good team. But when they enter into the postseason, I need to look up and down that lineup, Kevin, to myself and say, where are the at-bats coming from that are going to be clutch? There's not a lot of household names outside of maybe Seager in that lineup. And then you take a look at their bullpen. It's not a lot of great performers back there that are those high-end guys making tons of money, but they're getting the job done. The starting pitching staff, it's a lot left to be desired for myself. It's almost like I wonder how they win baseball games. So I'm waiting for the playoffs where they match up against a really good ball club and probably be on the road if they do make it into the playoffs. I expect them to get bounced out quickly. But at the same notion, don't they feel, Kevin, a lot like the Tampa Bay Rays? Who's their starting pitchers? I don't know. Who's in their lineup? On a given night, I'm not really sure of that either. Well, who's going to shut the door back here after Kendall Graveman, the greatest reliever of all time since Mariano Rivera left? Well, seemingly they have a couple guys that can handle that. The Mariners are very mystifying to me because I can't get a finger on them.
I think the reason, though, why that is incredibly fair, if I can offer just one number that should hopefully put this into perspective for people. So the Mariners are sandwiched in between Boston and Toronto. Boston with a run differential of plus 78. Toronto still with a preposterous plus 168, despite not being in the postseason race. The Mariners have a minus 48 run differential. Like, I think that's why you could still hold on to the idea. I don't know how good this team is, right? Again, the Giants have a plus 200 run differential on the season. Like, over time, it became abundantly clear that that is a just wonderful baseball team out there in San Fran. The Mariners are a team where that run differential is hard to look past there because sometimes that does tell you a lot. And I think the Seattle team, though, even if maybe, Donnie, they're not as good as some of these other teams here, at least they don't seem as good. They're a half back of Boston, a light schedule to go, and they're winners of 9 of their last 10 baseball games and 4 in a row. They're playing really, really well. And if they get in the mix, all of a sudden, 30-1, a lot worse numbers you very well could be holding. But Seattle's going to need to keep winning. So are the Yankees. So are the Blue Jays. And so are the Red Sox. Can those teams do that today? We'll break it down next right here on the Early Lock.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Let's head on over to this Major League Baseball preview because there's a lot of good games to get to here. And we'll start at the Boston Red Sox-Baltimore Orioles game because we've got Boston right now as a minus 220 favorite. Man, Pivetta, minus 220. I think it says a lot more about Wells going for Baltimore here. A total of 10 in this baseball game. Boston got it done yesterday, 6-0, 13 hits in that matchup here. Donnie, can Boston get it done again?
They should be able to get it done fairly easily. Take a look at Wells, the lefty on the mound here. If we just take a look at a snapshot of his last 30 days in Major League Baseball, an XFIP number of 6.70. It's almost unheard of that an XFIP can get that high. Doesn't strike out very many batters, right around 10%. And if we take a look, Kevin, as we like to use the moniker, an equal opportunity chance to knock him around on the mound, he is a lefty. Take a look. He's faced only 11 lefties over the past 30 days in Major League Baseball, Kevin. A 557 weighted on base percentage with a 300 ISO power number. Say, hey, maybe he's handling right-handed batters a little bit better. Not the case here. He's faced about 50 of those in the last 30 days. 363 weighted on base percentage with a 267 ISO power number. Not the greatest looking lineup here versus lefties for the Boston Red Sox, but you do have some decent power guys in that lineup, particularly at the end of it. Schwarber, the lefty, 454 weighted on base percentage going up against lefties over the past 30 days. Dalbec, 502. Iglesias, 429. Renfro, 380. So there are some guys with some elevated weighted on base percentages versus left-handed pitchers over the last 30 days. Just by default, right? Now, I like to say I'm a day late, a dollar short here, because I keep harping back where, come on, Chris Sale, you can't beat the Orioles, but yet they win 6-0 yesterday. Should be another one of those drubbings today. And you're right, Nick Pivetta, not a great pitcher, and I don't think it matters.
And it's almost then just a nice spot, maybe, even if 10 feels high. Pivetta could probably give Baltimore enough where the Red Sox could carry this number over the 10 for this baseball game, which isn't a bad look. Just going straight down here, Robbie Ray against Corey Kluber. Oh, man. The AL Cy Young against the New York Yankees. The Yankees had an opportunity to bury this team last night. They messed that up because their Cy Young got rocked. He doesn't deserve the Cy Young. It actually is as simple as that, though. What do you make here, Donnie? I'll be honest. My early look here is that feels like some value on Robbie Ray at about minus 140.
No, it certainly does. And some of the matchups that you like from a Toronto side, if you can get a pitcher that handles right-handed bats or at least tames them, that's exactly what you want. I don't think that's going to be the case tonight with Corey Kluber, a 5'10 xFIP over the past month. He does have a decent strikeout rate here, Kevin, about 27% of the batters that he does face. But here's the issue that you have. This is a right-handed heavy lineup here for the Toronto Blue Jays and not a heavy right-handed strikeout lineup versus right-handed pitchers, which obviously Kluber is. Now, if we take a look at what Kluber does well, Kevin, he gets out left-handed batters, 32 he's faced over the past month, a 201 weighted on base percentage and an ISO power number of zero. Here's the issue again we have tonight. You know, the only lefty in the lineup is going to be Dickerson, which means eight right-handed bats here and good bats at that. Because we take a look at Kluber's last month in Major League Baseball facing right-handed batters, he's faced 47 of them, Kevin. Dig these numbers. 470 weighted on base percentage and an ISO power number of 350, way over double the Major League Baseball average. So if we're looking at some runs tonight, Toronto's offense, Kevin, they just might provide those.
Great. So Toronto's got a favorable matchup, and the Yankees are going against the AL Cy Young. The thing is as I was bringing this game through, I could see Donnie out of the corner of my eye smiling, so I knew it wasn't going to be a preview that I was excited to hear. What an absolute nightmare this series has already become. Here's another game that you got to bring up, and it's probably the last time we'll bring this team up. The Philadelphia Phillies. They got to win out, and they need Atlanta to lose out. Probably not going to happen, Donnie. Can they at least get this one tonight, though? Kyle Gibson? The prized arm of that deadline they brought over?
Yeah, I don't know if they get this, but I do feel a little bit more comfortable at the Philadelphia Phillies bats and that offensive power surge that we're talking about in games that you really need to win. Their last three, they scored a total of three runs. Not exactly getting the job done at the plate, so you really can't blame the pitching staff. I think Gibson will be okay in this game. I do like that Atlanta lineup. But let's take a look at who the Phillies are going to face on the mound. Ian Anderson, the righty, taking a look at his last 30 days of Major League Baseball, getting that little snapshot, close to a 6X FIP number. Lefties are destroying him, Kevin. 28 batters he's faced over the past 30 days, a 572 weighted on base percentage with a 6.8, yes, you read that right, a 680 ISO power number. So if you take a look at some lefties in the lineup tonight, Odubel Herrera, Bryce Harper, Miller, Gregorius, Galvis, they should hit at the plate. Then again, they should do a lot of things to Philadelphia Phillies, and they, being the Philadelphia Phillies, only have three total runs in their last three games. I think they do hit tonight. Will they win? That's another story. They don't have any shot. And I've been telling you guys this for a long time. I thought the Braves would win the division even when they didn't have the lead in August because they're their best overall team. That's playing out right now. That little mirage of, hey, the Phillies need to take at least two or three or sweep the Braves. Good luck on that. That dream has already died here. The Phillies won't make the playoffs, but maybe they can hit tonight and salvage the series and maybe win me a little bit of cash.
It would be nice to see him hit. It's, as Donnie said, been a while over the last 31 innings of action, three total runs. You do that in math, ain't really scoring a run a game. So it'd be nice to see them hit. It is, man. And I tell you, and a credit to you, because you not only called Atlanta, but you called it a bit way out. Like, they were the third choice in the market at the time where the Mets were still favored and the Phils were hot on their heels. But you were bang on the Atlanta Braves, and they're looking to close out the Philadelphia Phillies. And I think this is impressive, too, from Atlanta. Again, playoff-style atmosphere here, legitimate stakes in this situation against the Phillies. And it's a good showing for a team before the playoffs to put forward a performance like this. I want to head towards the bottom of the board here and bring up the L.A. Dodgers. Man, oh, man. Could you imagine a world, Nani? Plus 500 on the Dodgers to win the NL West here. They win every night. And it doesn't matter because so do the Giants.
It's incredible to watch it play out, and it's going to go right up to the end. And we were talking last night on In Play Sports Tonight. Maybe it's better for the Dodgers to be eliminated earlier so they can get on with their lives and focus on winning that one-game wild card position. Because I have a feeling this game is going to go, this series is going to go down to, you know, the last game, who's going to win between the Giants and the Dodgers. But you take a look at tonight; it's like a reprieve. And last night, Max Scherzer on the hill, should be an easy victory, 5-1. They had to come back with some unbelievable pyrotechnic and fireworks in the eighth inning to beat the Padres, which, hey, Padres now another game under 500. Who actually would have called that one as well? But look at tonight on the mound. It's the same thing I get on the Philadelphia Phillies, and it's so great that a Philadelphia Philly is going to be on the mound today. I should say a former Philadelphia Philly for the Padres. That's Vince Velasquez. So I open it up, Kevin, and I know what the Dodgers can do with the plate. Saw it last night. No lead is too big going up against the Dodgers because they can come back, as I like to call them, team launch angle. Launching balls out into the night is what they do. Vince Velasquez is on the mound for the Padres. The white towel is already up, and the white flag is flying high over the Padres. They're going to get detonated again tonight. What number is high enough for a team total for the Dodgers tonight? Whatever it is, I didn't look. It can't be high enough going against Vince Velasquez and this dead Padres team.
Man, I mean, Vinny V, one of my absolute favorites. I found out the Phillies maybe have, like, just the best pitchers in all of baseball. Spencer Howard, Vince Velasquez. Can I give him credit for Jake Arrieta as well? Just a group of guys you have to root for. Matt Moore, right? Just an aces bunch. Can I bring up the Max Scherzer point quickly, Donnie? Because Max Scherzer yesterday did have a poor outing, his first true poor outing in a Dodger uniform, and it's now been reflected in the NL Cy Young race. Max Scherzer no longer the favorite, plus 160. The favorite is Corbin Burns at minus 175. What's interesting to me is Corbin Burns should have one more start under his belt. Now, maybe Milwaukee won't send him out there, but if they do, Donnie, it would be against the LA Dodgers. I wonder if we see Burns again.
It's interesting, and I want to bring this point up here, Kevin, because it's very fascinating. Usually, most awards are basically wrapped up at this point, where it's not like, well, I got to watch this guy's last start. And it has like a college football feel to it with Max Scherzer. And the reason I bring that up is he has been nothing short of absolutely outrageous. He gets lit up in one start last night, which even when you look at his starts now coming over from the Dodgers and looking at it as a whole, it's still outrageously phenomenal. So he goes from a favorite to a decided underdog because of one bad pitching performance that the Dodgers won that baseball game. It's funny the way it works out here. Oh, he can't win it now. What happens if Max Scherzer came in last night and threw four straight no-hitters and he still had a price of minus 200, gets lit up last night? Max, he lost it. There's no way he can win this award at this point. It's a fascinating market to watch it move. Number one, we're talking about Cole and Robbie Ray in the AL, but also this one, because we came into last night's game and said, hey, Max, six innings, two earned runs, and a win. It's over. And the fact that it went the opposite way, it's over now the other way, it's kind of interesting to watch it play out. Corbin Burns, now the 175 favorite here at the FanDuel Sportsbook to win the Cy Young in the National League.
But here's what I also don't understand at all about this market. What happened to Walker Buehler? He didn't go out there. Like, did I miss something here, Donnie, where he went out there and gave up 15 runs, like, every single outing? His ERA is still sub 2.5. The advanced numbers still smile on Buehler. Like, I mean, it wasn't the greatest September, but, like, he was the big favorite for this award. What, you know, and that's the one thing here is you're so, I wonder if at this point the betting markets are a real representation of, are voters just every night flipping coins and writing it down in pencil and erasing it, Donnie?
Yeah, maybe. Are they going to bed like when they log off a show at 10 o'clock and never watch the Dodgers on the West Coast and just read the clippings in the morning? Maybe so, Kevin. Maybe so.
Man, who would ever do such a thing? But that'll do it for Major League Baseball. Up next, we go back Thursday Night Football, spread, total, player props, all next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
back right here on Sports Grid. Time for a Thursday night football breakdown. Jags, Bengals, Bengals, Jags, Bengals. Get into it, people. It's Joe Burrow. It's Trevor Lawrence. It's a 7.5-point spread for the home Cincy squad. A total, Donnie, of 46.5. We talked early. This is a game where you could see points here. I'm curious, not just from the overall perspective, but even the team totals here. Do you feel like a squad could potentially be carrying the load in this matchup?
I think it has to be the Bengals here, but you do need, as we like to say, running mate with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think we get points in this game. So we're looking at that 46.5, which I guess in today's NFL seems like an absolute bargain, because in the past you're looking at 47.5, 48 as the high watermark for the week on some of these totals, but not the case anymore, as they, you know, routinely run into the 50s as high as 54.5 and 55.5. I do think Cincinnati is the better team. I want to see the Cincinnati Bengals at a favorite level here. Can they cover the 7.5, which means they're probably going to have to win by double digits at home? I think they can pull this one off, but I'm not all that excited by the side. But again, I do think we'll get some points out of the equation here, and I'm more likely to go with the over than I would an under here on Thursday Night Football. But I do think Cincinnati carries the side. Now, can they, Kevin, get those 28 points or so needed to get a team total? I think they can. Not a ton of confidence here on this Thursday night football game, but I do think the Bengals are the better side.
I think Cincy is certainly the better team, Donnie. The interesting thing is, and it's always so valuable, and I know you're a team total backer, but even if somebody out there isn't a team total better, you should always look at them when you're looking especially to bet an over in a football game. It helps put things into perspective there. Because if you go, I think Cincinnati has a good game offensively, this game gets over the number. But then I say, okay, so you think the Bengals score 30? Whoa, that's way too many.
Yep.
It's not all that far off from where their team total checks in here. And I think Jacksonville's number of 19 jumps off of the page a little bit more here. And I think the more I look at these numbers, Donnie, the more I feel like Jacksonville is competitive in this game here. And the thing is, what a 7.5-point spread is, you don't even have to be super competitive. You just have to avoid disasters out there on the field. And maybe that's going to be difficult, right, for a rookie quarterback going into only his fourth football game on a short week. Urban Meyer now still obviously with a long career as a coach, but still it's only his fourth NFL game. All of that could make it a little bit difficult on him. It makes the game difficult overall, but I'm leaning over. I'm leaning Jaguars. But I wanted to, again, ask you, Donnie, because I know when it comes to betting, I mean, really all sports, but specifically the NFL, I know there are certain rules that you kind of stick by. And I know Thursday is kind of, typically that home team or no team moniker here. How does that almost multiply, if at all, when you then talk about the Urban Meyer, Trevor Lawrence, 1-2 punch that are so young into their NFL careers?
Yeah, and quite as of last week on Thursday Night Football, you know, home team or no team. But I was saying, like, there's really extenuating circumstances here, not only because Houston Texans are a terrible football team, but they're going to start a kid that's clearly not ready to be out there. And they got rolled over. And then the game was actually close for a little while, but the better team with a more veteran-laden offense was able to get that victory. So you take a look at tonight, Trevor Lawrence. They haven't won yet. So you're actually anticipating here, Kevin, the Jacksonville Jaguars to go on the road, pick up their first victory in 18 games on a Thursday night against a team that they're dogs by more than a touchdown. That's going to be a big-time effort here. But when we're taking a look at points, I think you bring up a pretty good one here. When you look at the Jacksonville Jaguars, can they get to 20 points? You say, you know what? Okay, it's a rookie quarterback. He's on the road, but he's got some talent. You have a decent, maybe above average, wide receiver core if you can get them the football. The Bengals don't have a great defense by any stretch, so you should see points from their angle. It's a little bit different than saying, all right, Donnie, let's take the team from the Houston Texans with Davis Mills. Whoa, I don't know if I like that. All right, well, how about the Chicago Bears and Justin Fields after that performance last week to take their team total? Whoa, I don't know about that either. And oh yeah, Zach Wilson and the Jets, who got shut out last week. This field doesn't have the same thing. The three teams I just mentioned, they're like, hey, I want to stay as far away as I can, but the Jacksonville offense still is a little bit intriguing because Trevor Lawrence is a great talent. He's got a big arm. He's mobile. He's got wide receivers, some running backs that they can use, and also going up against, as I said, a Cincinnati Bengals defense, which is good, but not upper echelon to me in the NFL. They should be able to move the ball. So I always like to say, worst case scenarios, like what would be shocking to you? the Jaguars scoring 14 points or the Jaguars scoring 21 points. I think it'd be more likely to me the Jaguars get to the 21-point margin than just get the 14 against the Bengals, particularly because the Jacksonville Jaguars also don't have a great defense, and the Bengals should be able to move the football.
Yeah, I keep coming back to that Jacksonville team total. You know, the more you talk it out, it seems to be like a legitimate look here on the board. I want to go over to the player props. We'll get to some of the yardage quickly. But, Donnie, did you go through the touchdown score market at all and find anything that was eye-popping? I was interested to see what they would do with Ja'Marr Chase, who is 3-for-3 in touchdown games, 4 touchdowns on the season to start the year. He's minus 125. Joe Mixon, the biggest favorite at minus 190. Any other player in this football game with a plus number in front of him?
It's funny. You bring up the points and you say, what makes the most sense in this equation? Joe Mixon at minus 190 is ridiculous. But should he score the touchdown? Absolutely. You know who else was ridiculous a week ago on Thursday Night Football? Christian McCaffrey. Did he score? No. And he got injured. So I immediately, even though I think Joe Mixon scores and you would pay a 190 price, it makes the most sense because if they're on the 1 yard line or the 5, he's probably going to get the football. But I can't pay that up. I like your Ja'Marr Chase look, but he's a rookie wide receiver at minus 125. It's got to be lower end of the spectrum numbers. So a guy like maybe wide receivers, if you think Jacksonville is going to be losing, maybe take a look at a Marvin Jones plus 180, a DJ Chark at plus 210, something in that range. Because if we're just looking at Chark, should both of those guys score? Yes. But it's a running back without a plus price. I'll pass on that. And it's a young rookie wide receiver who has had some success early in his career at scoring touchdowns, but he's still a minus 125. That perspective changes for me, Kevin. If Chase is at a plus 125, give me the wide receivers on the Jacksonville Jaguars at plus money as a possible look here tonight.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. And, you know, this almost kind of goes against it. Like, what do you mean? Like, the Ja'Marr Chase touchdown score bet hasn't lost and you don't want to bet it? Yeah. And what is he going to score every single game of his NFL career? He's not at LSU anymore. Minus 125. Let him get a week off. Let him not score this week and maybe come back to the window in week 5. It's just such an interesting number to lay there. You mentioned Joe Mixon, Donnie, as we start to talk a little bit more about some of the yardage props here. And Joe Mixon to me is, you know, what you would kind of quantify as a do-it-all running back. The interesting thing, though, right now is he's doing significantly more on the ground than the air. Week 1, 4 catches on 4 targets for 23 yards. But then you look at the last 2 weeks here. 1 catch, 2 targets, 2 yards. And then against the Steelers, 1 catch on 1 target for 4 yards. And I look at Joe Mixon, and perhaps people are finding this to be the buy-low spot on his reception numbers. Over 2.5 receptions is minus 158. If this number, Donnie, in the way that it suggests, gets to 3.5 here, I almost feel like I have but no choice to see if this is a trend where perhaps Joe Burrow wants to go a little bit more down the field and use his wide receiver core in the passing game and bet that Joe Mixon doesn't have a 4-catch football game. I always worry when it comes to a player like that where, you know, I'd rather under receptions than yards just because a 20-yard catch, even for on a screen pass or a running back, is very live. But that was an under prop on Mixon under receptions that I thought could make some sense here.
Yeah, it might make some sense. You're right, because his usage rate has been through the roof running the football, and apparently that is working, so you want to stick to that same game plan. But also, let's remember, when these guys are playing in football games, particularly on the road against the Steelers, those are physical football games, which you have to quick turnaround and playing on Thursday night. So maybe his usage rate is a little bit lower. Maybe some other running backs get those third down looks here, particularly where those dump offs probably would come by. It's not a bad look by you on that aspect, but I do think, you know, they will move the football. I believe I saw, I haven't get caught up here, but on the carries in this game, I know it was close to 20, which is crazy for a running back, it seems like, in the NFL. Back in the 90s, hey, over 20, yeah, the guy's going to get 34 carries in this one. That is a high number, particularly, as I said again, coming off a nice usage week there last week in Pittsburgh and now flipping around earlier. So there are some interesting ones overall to take a look at. I do have a same-game parlay that does include Mixon in this one. All rushing prop for me, Kevin. Over 50 yards or more in this one. So I do have a couple legs, and he is tied into one, figuring he should have some success. The Jacksonville defense isn't very good, and they should be winning. He should get enough carries in here to get over 50 yards for me.
Man, you love a good same-game parlay.
Yeah.
Did you give the – Are you going to give the people the full deal here?
Let's go.
I mean, you loved it.
Yeah, man, see, I was trying to get a tease here. Like, ooh, man, like people were waiting at home like Clue. Like they got the pen and paper. I was like, all right, mm-hmm. In the 7 o'clock hour, he said he liked Lawrence over 200. The 8 o'clock, you know what I mean? So sort of string it along and keep it moving. But here it is. It's four different legs here. It's a plus 117, so it is a plus money price. Joe Mixon, 50 or more rushing yards tonight. The Bengals alt line, plus 3.5. Tyler Boyd, 40 or more receiving yards. And Trevor Lawrence, 200 or more passing yards. So I got a four-team leg. I put one unit on, so obviously $100 wins the 117 back. Usually I don't like to go all that much and, you know, let it settle in. But this is one of those where I just wanted to trust my first looks. I didn't want to analyze all throughout the day. And by the time I had my card ready to say, you know what, make a decision this morning with the market up. That's what I went with. That's what I bet it. And that's what I'm going to cheer on tonight.
Boy, I tell you what, man. That just reminds me of the NBA days. Man, if you were with us on In Play Sports tonight, the parlay building there, alt numbers, getting a little plus money there. Ooh, that is a good situation there. I want to quickly just bring up once again the James Robinson props, because he, to me, is the most fascinating player on the prop board tonight. 23.5 receiving yards, 3.5 receptions. You go to his rushing props, 53.5. And last week, James Robinson, of his rookie year, felt back, and it felt like the Jaguars were a little bit more willing to get this guy in the mix. 6 catches, 15 carries, getting over 100 total yards of offense here. And this is still a Cincy team that I think you can move the football on. The interesting thing about this prop is you never want to try and buy the apex. And you've got Robinson off of his best game of the season. And you've got a Cincinnati team that is coming off of a game where they allowed / let Najee Harris catch the ball 14 times, which is just so many times. But I cannot help, Donnie, but find myself enamored with James Robinson over 76.5 rushing plus receiving yards. No matter the game script, I feel like Robinson is in the mix to get you over that total. He got over that total on rushing yards alone last week. I think you pair these two up, and I think he can have another good day against Cincy.
I like where you're going here. And by the way, you know, I want to clear up the bloodbath on Monday Night Football where everybody was scoring touchdowns, and I was betting everybody to score touchdowns except for the guys that were actually scoring the touchdowns. The match specials, 1, 2, 3, and 4 tonight. We have a long way to go today because there is a lot of money I'm going to waste to have Joe Burrow to have one plus passing touchdown in each half. I'm taking a look at Trevor Lawrence to do the same. There are so many good bets out here. Just waiting to lose from Donnie Wright's side here.
I tell you what, Don, match specials one specifically, people, is the place to be. Also the place to be tonight, In Play Sports Tonight, Sports Grid Radio. Yep. Kevin Walsh, Don and Rideside, we'll see you there 7 p.m. Eastern time covering that Thursday board. But up next here on the early line for one final time, Ariel Epstein joins Don and Rideside to let you know what's coming up on the morning after.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Last segment today for the early line for a Thursday. The NFL is back in our lives. Both myself, Donnie Wrightside, and Kevin Walsh carrying you through 7 to 9. And it's time to hand it off to the morning after today. But I have to say, the crossover been an important part of my time here at Sports Grid. And I feel a little bit melancholy here because it was so much, both myself and Ariel here. Canseco and McGuire, Pippen to Jordan, Stockton to Malone, Montana to Rice, Wrightside to Epstein. It just goes together. The last ride for one Ariel Epstein coming up here over the next 3 hours. Talk to me about this. Talk to me about this big moment here, Ariel.
This is like the early after every time we do these crosstalks, Donnie. Yeah, it is my last day at Sports Grid. It's really bittersweet, excited for the future, but also reflecting over the last 24 hours over how far this network has come. I am excited to just do 3 hours, provide all of the edges that I can for everyone watching. And just thinking back to how this show, The Morning After, how it started when I came here and to where it is now, it's just unbelievable what we've been able to accomplish.
Yeah, Sports Grid is in a much better place here, Ariel. Since you came here, we always wish you nothing but the best, particularly here from the boys at the Early Line. I know you're going to have a great show here, a lot of proper send-offs. And if you know how popular people are, specifically on social media, when you send out some of those goodbyes and I'm moving on, you know right away who's going to be in that ballpark, who people are rooting for. Ariel is certainly one of those people here. If you saw all the love last night from upper management to everybody's worked at Sports Grid to even people just out there in the general Twitter sphere, fantastic stuff here. We're certainly going to miss you here on the network, but I know you have a big show coming up today. You want to talk about any details that you have coming up, any guests, any good stuff here?
We're going to talk about Thursday Night Football. Major League Baseball is down to the wire. How has the market moved in the World Series market since even at the beginning of September? There's been so much movement. I'm excited. It's my favorite time of year, Donnie, this fall time where we've got September, the end of September, October 1st is tomorrow. It's just all coming down to the wire. And the NFL, of course, it's just so much fun.
The great Dr. Seuss said, don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. Ariel Epstein, a Sports Grid legend. Stay tuned for The Last Ride.